Verulam Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sports Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. Hello and welcome to Verulam Sports Podcasting, and it's delightful to be back. And we are welcomed by an old and very dear friend. It's the legendary press officer for the supreme team in the St. Albans rugby context, Old Albanians. We're referring, of course, to our friend, Mr. Brian Quinn. Welcome to Verulam Sports Podcasting.
Good afternoon, Tony. Great to be here. How are you?
Keeping well in these strange times, Brian. I tell you what, you've got to adapt and evolve, don't we? But there we go.
Indeed.
Anyway, Brian, it's always a sincere pleasure to speak all things rugby with you. I always appreciate your erudition on the topic. But before we kind of delve into matters too deeply, let's kick things up with the news, quite sad I feel, about the passing of what I'd like to consider, although never met him personally, a little big man from the old A's community. Tell us a bit more.
It's been a sad time. There have, in fact, been two passings in the club. The first, a week or so, well, 2 weeks ago, was sadly Beryl, who was the wife of Richard Milnes, our president. So the top echelons have been hit. Beryl was a fixture of the club for an awful long time. She was a great woman. However, her services, etc., and her obituary are a private matter with Richard. Ali was the more public face of the club, shall we say, in many ways. Ali was an old boy at Bedford School. He joined the club in the 60s, and he's been there ever since. He's played for every team that the club has put forward, and I joined him from 83 onwards in at least four of those teams. He was
terms of his playing days, Brian, just to cut in there, like your good self in the heart of the front row, he was a fulcrum of a rugby union team, a scrum half, am I right in saying?
He was indeed, yep.
And he in was, terms of his playing style, who would you compare him to, if anybody at all?
Let me put a few words on top of that. His longtime fly half mate, Tommy Howard, who also sadly is no longer with us, he was tremendous in praising his mate, Ali, for years and years and years, including saying things like Ali was a very tidy boxer when he was a young man. With regard to his scrum half abilities, Tommy Howard, when he'd had more than he should have had alcohol-wise, often said that Ali was the inventor of the Barnes-Wallace pass.
For the uninitiated amongst us, Brian, can you just explain what that pass looks like?
Well, if you remember the Cambrobero brothers from France, something like 40-odd years ago, they developed a big, long, looping pass, which a modern-day flanker would give his eye teeth to get on the end of. The Barnes-Wallace pass refers to the bouncing bomb, so that the pass from the nine might well reach the ten after it hit the deck three or four times. Tommy was being very unkind there. Ali was as brave as a lion. He had a good pass. He had a great eye for the game. He played with his head up. He looked at things and he looked for the main chance. It's old-fashioned laws now. He would have, I think, done far better in the modern game with the way things are these days. Scrum halves get a lot more protected than they did then. Ali had to put up with that, and no better man.
And Brian, you yourself there in that front row were there to protect him. Of course you were, and played alongside him back in the season 83. What's your memories of him on the pitch alongside your good self?
The individual matches tend to blur into one in many, many ways. It starts before the match when somebody arrives quite often late because he was very, very, a very busy businessman, and he would get there before the match, quite often just before the match. So the warm-up, I remember on one occasion, we were at Bacavians, which is it's now the middle of a motorway in Hatfield. It used to be British Aircraft Corporation's ground. And we played there, and somebody, I think it was Ali, started banging his mud-encrusted boots on the floor, the concrete floor of the changing room. And people thought, well, that sounds like a wardrobe, a warm-up, so let's do that. So we ended up all battering and screaming. We used to count backwards from 10 down to 1. Nobody ever knew why, but that was it. So Ali led that little warm-up, and we won the match afterwards.
Who needs the haka when you've got Ali and yourself and the whole OA's cohort counting down from 10 backwards and banging those studs on the wall? It was wonderful.
All the time screaming. It had to be done at the scream, otherwise you couldn't get warm enough.
Brian, clearly you have fond memories of Ali Mills, and obviously our fond wishes to him now, and of course his family. Just purely from reading the obituary, because I never had the pleasure to meet him, it sounds to me like he was something of a maverick. Would you say that was a fair comment?
No. Loyal as the day is long. A good committee man. I wouldn't say he was a maverick in any way. He was opinionated in all the right ways. If there was a plan of action to be carried forward, he would carry it forward. I've never met a man so thunderstruck as the time I met him at Westminster Lodge. And I said, what the heck are you doing here? You don't need to train anymore. You don't even play. He said, no, I've just been asked to serve as club president, and I'm trying to come to terms with that. He was that honored. And I think it was 8 years he was president of the club. And as presidents tend to do, he worked his socks off for the club and took us through some difficult times. That is quite often to do with the personality of the man at the helm. He's the bloke where the buck stops. And he answers all the difficult questions. He liaises with county and answers to the RFU on many, many occasions. Ali was absolutely up for everything like that and very honoured to do so.
It does sound to me like he was very much an old Albanian's man through and through. But that being said, I think you've expressed wonderfully the role of a president. My own father has had the honour of being president of Leicestershire RFU.
Wow.
But sometimes, from what he's reported back to me, so not personal experience, there are those amongst that order who sometimes get a little bit big for their boots. Ali, that your friend and now dearly parted Ali Mills was very much not in that character. And I like the stuff you were writing about his one of the lads style, being at the back of buses. Tell us a bit more.
It's entirely that. Leicester, of course, were famous. The back of their bus was well known, and you literally had to fight your way into the back seat on the back of a Leicester bus.
Yeah, Dino and Jonas, I think, were holding court, so to speak.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And right back to Peter Wheeler and people like that. Ali didn't need to fight his way back. He was invited by the team. The team automatically knew where his heart was. He had no interest whatsoever, really, in talking to the rest of us. Ali Cadoux at the front. He would be with the team because he wanted to know what they were doing. He was interested. He would be quite happy to be there all the time, to be drinking with them. And whatever mayhem was going on, Ali tends to be in the middle of it rather than anything else. And if all that failed, then we'd burst into song.
Brian Quinn, I tell you what, I'm almost feeling a bit rueful that I never had the pleasure of Ali's company. Just in closing on this theme, what were your final thoughts and words, and obviously maybe an expression of good love to the family Mills at this time?
He leaves behind son Jonathan, who's in Australia and I believe trying to get back for the arrangements now, and a daughter Amy. Jonathan, I don't believe Amy plays the game, and I in fact haven't met her. I have met Jonathan, a very tidy halfback, and not sure who he's playing for with Australia, but I look forward to seeing him again. The club wishes him well. We are devastated to lose a man of that calibre. There's not many of them around, and you need all that you can get.
Brian Quinn, thank you for that, and our thoughts and best wishes are extended from Verum Sports to the community Old Albanians, and of course that runs well deep through to the family Mills at this time. But it's time now for us to consider all things going forwards, as one must. And I know, Brian, that there was a rather exciting Q&A going on last night. Tell us a bit more.
Hannah Gallagher, she, an astonishing woman. She, at the age of 14, 15, she was still playing rugby at county level, but with the county side, the male side. And it's unusual for A, that to be allowed, and B, for somebody to thrive in that particular ethos. But she did exactly that. She was told at the age of 17, I think, that she had England capabilities. She was also told, she was playing at Saracens, a premiership club at the time, and she was a centre. And her coach for England said, fine, you will play for the country. And I think you have a very long history to come, shall we say. But you are not a centre, you are a flanker. So she had to change position. She had to tell her premiership club that I can't be centre anymore. I am going to be a flanker because that's what England want. That's exactly what she did.
Just to come on to the flank position, because again, it's fascinating to me. I mean, what a transition that is, and a mega one, as you've explained. Did she tend to wear number 7 or number 6?
It didn't really matter to Hannah. She and Maggie Alfonsi were vying for the same position for years and years. The two of them, tremendous friends. And in training, they used to G each other up about who was getting the, etc. But she spoke absolutely volumes about Maggie, who is an icon for everybody who follows England ladies rugby. Met her on a couple of occasions, and certainly she's played against our ladies at the OAs on various occasions. Tremendous opportunity for them to do that. So is it a difference? She's a big woman. She's got some size. She's got a tremendous amount of power to her. Now, obviously, if you have the acceleration and the ball handling, then centre is great for that. According to Hannah, she said, my ball handling wasn't the greatest you've ever seen. Passing, not exactly. So it was actually a godsend when somebody, a coach who was absolutely on top of these sort of things, said, well, you actually want to be at the back of the scrum. That's where your position is going to be. You want to destroy things. You want to carry the ball. You want to do the hard yards. And she spent a lot of time last night explaining that that's exactly what she did, and she enjoyed every moment of it.
What a great life that the world of rugby opens up to us when we embrace it. And it's always great to hear in person the wonderful stories of these superstars. Before we close up on that, Brian, I know yourself were eager to get in there and pose a question. Did that occur?
Yes, it did.
It was a great question, Brian. Go on, enlighten us as to precisely how this went down.
I asked her, I stated that the ladies' game has been developing very, very fast and tremendous developments have taken place. What can the media do to bring what is a superb sport even more to the forefront of the public? She said various things about that. One particular thing practically, the ladies' games, the ladies' internationals are quite often played at Twickenham at the end of a major male fixture. Everybody by that stage has normally hit the bars, and they are doing whatever they do after an international. She said, I would love it if international women's games could be played, or whatever standout games they've got, could be played before what is supposedly the main fixture at Twickenham or any other major ground, because people get to the ground early. You know Twickenham as well as I do. They get there very quickly, and they like to see something. If there was something to wet their teeth, there would be more people getting there earlier. But more importantly, the ladies, who deserve a huge following, would play in front of a much fuller Twickenham. And I think that's a wonderful point.
I think it's a wonderful point that I'm certainly going to bang that drum for. We've been very lucky over the years to speak with Sarah McKenna, another Saracens and England star. And what has been impressive is to learn the fact that they are, despite the shortcomings you've alluded to there, making massive strides, bigger crowds year on year. And, you know, again, they are, of course, Grand Slam winners at this present time. Wonderful, wonderful team. So progress is certainly being made, and that's positive. But, Brian, I think that's a wonderful shout. I'm certainly going to bang that drum. Just quickly,
You put a question yourself, if I dare make so bold, Tony. And that was, laws have been coming thick and fast.
Yes.
In the game of rugby in particular. Is there any law that she would like to change or change back, and why? She made the point, as most flankers would, I think, in all forms of the game.
We're talking breakdown.
We're talking breakdown, but we're also talking the high tackle. You know, anybody who goes close to somebody's just above the chest, shall we say, shoulders, is automatically pilloried now, quite often red carded. She thinks that's utterly wrong and should be looked at again. Certainly with the idea of the video players that we have here, I would tend to agree with her. I think sometimes tackles are made in desperation. There's no vicious intention because the game is too quick for that sort of thing these days. But people sometimes get the wrong sort of luck in that sort of situation, and it's always the tackler.
Right, again, great
particularly
points.
Particularly obviously when somebody dips into a tackle, because being a short guy myself, I ducked under a number ones. I wasn't always lucky. Sometimes I got my nose broken, but that just happens that way.
Absolutely. Again, they are the scars of war. Great points. Again, I think we're going to build on this over the coming weeks and months, you and I, and I'm excited for that already. Yep. Just circling back, and again, we've got to keep this quite brief. You mentioned the hammer tackle there. The whole originals of this conversation were stemming from the ex-president, Ali Mills, there at the OAs. Coming back now to the highest echelon, a new second term tenure for president of the World Game, Mr. Bill Beaumont. Getting confused there momentarily with his old sparring partner in game question of sport. But yes, I wanted the Maverick Pichot to seize the day. He ran him close, didn't he? And that's interesting. But what's your initial take on Beaumont and his second tenure? Just initial top lines and a bit of a teaser for what might be your longer term theories.
I think it's a huge missed opportunity for rugby in general. I really do. Whether Augustine would have done a wonderful job, don't know. He certainly had the right preparation for it, and I think his thinking is absolutely right. He's
another world-class nine, hey?
Indeed. He's a player's man. He wants the best for the players. I'm sure Bill himself wants exactly that. Bill has a wonderful playing career behind him. He was skipper of England. He was skipper of the Lions. You can't take that away from him. I believe the rugby union generally and the upper echelons are a bit hidebound. I don't think they listen often enough to players, and particularly people with playing experience like Pichon. Again, I think it's a missed opportunity.
Brian, wonderful top line thoughts. I'm certainly going to look to enjoy unpacking this and certainly watching how Beaumont leads the bigger game from here on, and then more critically how that ripples down to OAs and indeed the lower levels there, because let's not forget OAs of course are the premier team in St Albans and Hertfordshire and deserve their respect accordingly. Brian, for me, what can I tell you, always an honour and a privilege to enjoy a bit of a rugby pontification with your good self. Again, I want to extend Durham Sports best wishes to the whole club at this sad time and, of course, to Family Mills. Thank you ever so much for your time just now.
Thank you, Tony. Talk soon. Bye-bye.